don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's always just such a great time to be with you, and it's a privilege to be with our listeners on Saturday mornings. And I am in studio again, once again, with our producer, Mark Durkin, and he's also my co-host. Good morning.
Nice to see you again, Rebecca.
Yes, you too. And I hope you've had your second cup of coffee this morning, Mark.
Sometimes
and a third. Nice and relaxed.
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, today we want to take a close look at a subject that unfortunately receives some negative stereotypes and often some false labels and classifications. And these stereotypes have been a source of tremendous pain and frustration for some parents and their children. No parent ever really wants to hear or see that their child is suffering. And what we're talking about today is learning disabilities.
That's right, Rebecca. The fact is, and we want our audience to really understand this, that learning disabilities, they're not a problem with intelligence or motivation. Kids with learning disabilities, they're not lazy. They're not dumb. Most are just as smart as everyone else. A simple definition of a learning disability is when a child or an adult sees, hears, or understands things differently. Their brains are simply wired differently. The differences affect how they receive and process information. But there is hope, and there are tools that help pave the way in exercising a child's full potential in school and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this morning on Education Nation, we really want to examine some of the common specific learning disabilities and the other factors that contribute to learning difficulties. What parents should look for, or what they should do if they suspect a learning disability, and what to do if their suspicions are correct. So to answer these questions, we are going to be joined in studio today with two learning specialists. Shirley Marsh is a learning specialist for students with dyslexia, and she helps them with their reading at Liberty Classical Academy. And then Suzanne Horn is a fifth grade teacher at Liberty Classical Academy, and she also does reading work with the students. Both of them have degrees in special ed, Shirley with a master's degree and Suzanne with a undergraduate degree in special ed. And then both of them have been trained in the well-known Orton-Gillingham method. And so I want to welcome you both into the studio today.
Thank you.
It's good to be here. Thanks, Rebecca.
Well, we are just looking forward to being able to ask you some great questions. And I know, Mark, that you had some questions that maybe you wanted to start off with before I launch in.
Absolutely. Just a few moments, we'll take a look at factors that contribute to learning difficulties. But first, let's discuss common specific learning disabilities. And these are more scientific in explanation. So as we mentioned in the introduction, Cheryl Lee and Suzanne, they both specialize in working with children who have dyslexia. If one of you could first start just by telling our listeners what dyslexia is and maybe how prevalent it is in terms of what you've witnessed through the years.
Sure. Dyslexia literally means difficulty with the written word. And students who struggle with dyslexia, it's a neurological deficit that actually is present in the earliest stages of birth. So when your kids are first learning to speak, you can start to pick up on some of the things that they're not able to do as easily as maybe other siblings or other same-age peers, such as rhyming or isolating the first sound of a word like the b in bug, hearing those sounds and playing with sounds. And actually, dyslexia lies in the smallest part of language, which is at the sound level. So the earlier you can detect it, the better. And how prevalent is it? Up to 25% of our population.
Wow. I did not realize that it was that high. For some reason, I thought it was around 10%. So that's a really great piece of information and maybe a comfort for parents, because as we said at the very beginning, sometimes it's worrisome to hear that diagnosis of my child has a learning disability or my child has dyslexia. But when you think that up to 25% of the children in our schools today actually have that, I think that should give people peace of mind to realize it really is just a learning difference.
Mm-hmm. And it is the most prevalent of all the reading disabilities as well.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to ask Cheryl Lee this question. A second common, specific learning disability is dysgraphia. Almost looks the same. Please explain what this is.
Sure. Dysgraphia, just like dyslexia, is difficulty with also the written language. However, it has to do with the actual writing piece of language, and it can be taking those thoughts you have in your head and getting them on paper simultaneously can be very difficult. It can also just be in actual handwriting. You might see it earlier on, the way kids are making their letters. Rather than top down, it's bottom up. And this is also prevalent after you've been teaching kids to do it the correct way, and it still isn't sticking. So, yep. But definitely when it comes to the writing aspect, when you see the kids struggling to be able to formulate their thoughts verbally but not get them on paper.
Suzanne, do you have anything that you want to talk about with respect to that too, dysgraphia? It's pretty complete. Okay, she's saying pretty complete answer here. I'm just going to tell our listening audience, we're kind of juggling a couple of microphones here. We normally have three and we have two for four of us. So we're shifting. So bear with us
as
you're listening.
That's what the squeaking
sound is. Yes. So then there's a third dis. And, you know, this kind of reminds me of our Latin class, show that we did. The word D-Y-S, I'm assuming, or the prefix D-Y-S, I'm assuming is Latin. And it means problem, I'm guessing, right? Okay. So we have dyslexia, we have dysgraphia, and then we have dyscalculia.
Dyscalculia is, if you think of the root calculate, calcula mm-hmm. has to do with math. And this is a student or someone who has a hard time understanding math symbols. They can maybe struggle with memorizing and organizing numbers. They'll often have a very difficult time telling time, learning how to tell time, trouble counting. They may not understand the orders in multiplying or dividing.
And how prevalent is dysgraphia and dyscalculia, would you say, amongst children?
Well, a lot of times there are students who struggle with math that don't have dyscalculia, but if we start to see some of these patterns show up, I don't have a specific number for you, but we can see that oftentimes if you're concerned, we can look at the different points, say, oh, are they really struggling with word problems? Are they having these problems organizing? That can tell us if they have dyscalculia or just having a hard time with math.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a good distinction. I'm glad that you brought that up. And then another learning disability that some people may or may not be familiar with is auditory processing disorder. Maybe you can talk about what that is.
So auditory processing disorder is when a student or a person cannot recognize the difference between the sounds and words. So maybe they didn't understand what's being said. They are distracted by background noises. They hear a lecture, but they have difficulty telling back the lecture. They can't block out the sounds. They may be engrossed in something and not hear what someone else is saying. They could say what a lot and as they're trying to process things. Mm-hmm. So it's what they're hearing. They're not able to explain what they're hearing.
Okay. And then the fifth one that we were going to talk about today that we hear about that is common is language processing disorder. And Shirley, maybe you can talk to us about that one.
Sure. It's related to the auditory processing, but it has to do with the spoken language, not just sounds in general. They kind of go hand in hand, but it's another thing where maybe idioms are difficult for them, understanding jokes. These kids might appear to just not be understanding what's going on in conversation and just really struggle with making analogies and things to what they're hearing through the spoken language.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, in addition to very specific learning disabilities, there are other factors that can contribute to learning difficulties as well. Let's explain the role of memory in its three stages and how they contribute to learning difficulties.
I'll start off with the first one. So we have something called a working memory. Working memory is when a student can read something that, like, out of a paragraph, read sentences, connect the sentences together, and are able to tell you what that paragraph is all about. And that's working memory.
Yeah, and with working memory, it's being able to just hold on to that information as you're thinking. It's like you're multitasking within your brain. But short-term memory is very similar to the working memory, only it's that taking that information and being able to hold on to it for a while to be able to process the answer or the thought within a short amount of time. And then as you are repeating some of those short-term memories, it'll eventually land in your long-term memory, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. Those three types of memory, you know, you hear these words thrown around, but I don't know how often we stop and think about the role that they really play in learning. You know, you imagine a high school student that has trouble with working memory or short-term memory, sitting in a math class, listening to a math lesson, and, you know, each day getting a new lesson and having to build upon what they learned the year or the day before. And if that working memory is not working properly, or the short-term memory isn't working properly, it's going to be that much harder for that student to get that information really into their minds and then into their the level of understanding at the long-term memory level. So you can see where those really would play a big contributing factor to learning disabilities.
Here's a term that I heard for the first time as I was doing some research on this, processing speed. What is that, and how does it contribute to learning difficulties?
Processing speed really goes along with the auditory processing and the language processing. It's just how long it takes a student to take what information is presented to them, filter it through their brain, and be able to tell you, explain what they just heard or what they just saw.
Okay. And we were going to try to take a break here in a couple of minutes. So we're going to try to get through the last two that we wanted to discuss before the break. Attention deficit disorder, what specifically is that, and what role does that play?
Sure. Attention deficit disorder, or ADHD, is not a learning disability, but it often goes hand in hand with children and adults who have learning disabilities. But it's quite prevalent in classrooms, maybe 5 to 10%, that's about right, but higher population of kids who have a disability. So you might have 30 to 50% of kids who have a disability that actually also have ADHD.
Interesting. Okay, one more thing before we go to the break here. Executive functioning, that is another important term and role for learning.
I'd like to give you a picture of a student that's got a basket full of papers that are flying everywhere. They've lost their homework for the next day. It's a student or someone who basically has a hard time keeping themselves organized. They can't keep things together. They don't know how to manage their space.
Okay. And that you can – now, how do you differentiate that from just a normal child? Or does every child have trouble with executive functioning by virtue of the fact that they're a child?
No. There are some students that specifically have much more difficulty than others. I see definitely students that are just – their things are just out of control. Okay. And that's when we know they have an executive functioning issue.
And once again, it's many of the children who have a learning disability or ADHD that you see them also struggling just to stay on top of things, just all of the things coming at them visually through their ears to just, oh, you told me that. Oh, and they don't mean to miss it. It's just a constant battle within themselves to stay organized.
Very informative segment indeed. Well, we're going to take a quick break here on Education Nation. When we return, we want to discuss with our learning specialists what specifically parents should look for if they suspect their child may have a learning disability. You won't want to miss the discussion. Stay tuned.
We don't need no education.
Well, welcome back to Education Nation. I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, joined with my co-host, Mark Durkin. And we have LCA fifth grade teacher Suzanne Horn and learning specialist Shirley Marsh. Welcome, and so glad to have you here today. And you've been doing a great job helping us understand learning disabilities. And now we're going to shift gears into what parents can look for if they suspect that their children might have a learning disability. So what do you think parents should be looking for if they suspect that their child might have dyslexia, Shirley?
Sure. Dyslexia looks different for some kids. Some kids have pretty decent reading skills, but their spelling is difficult. I don't often see as many kids that are really strong in spelling but not strong in reading. But some kids, first of all, one marker of dyslexia is high intelligence. So many students who have dyslexia, they're so bright, and that's the disconnect that parents see. I see my kid, she's so smart, he's so smart, but he's just not learning to read, and it's painful when they're learning to read, and things just aren't clicking. The alphabet didn't come in quickly for them. Like I said before, hearing that onset sound, being able to play with our language, rhyming, being able to take sounds out of words to change words, those things that are kind of word games that often little kids are playing. Parents can see those things early on. And then as they get into school, they see other kids just picking up on things almost through osmosis, and their kids are just struggling to read three-letter words. So the earlier, the better. And I think parents often know their kids, even before they get to school, that things just aren't lining up like they should, because my kid just, I can tell they're smart. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, how many times have we seen that happen? And it is heartbreaking for parents. And again, that's where it's encouraging to know that A, that there's ways to help, and B, they're not alone, that there are 25% of kids out there. And just knowing that one of the markers is that they are intelligent is one thing I think that can help give them peace of mind as they move forward. We defined graphia in the last segment. And what are some things that parents should look for here?
Dysgraphia, again, we're talking about writing. So sometimes you'll see that they don't have their printing and cursive writing is very difficult to read. They may mix upper lowercase. Sometimes they'll leave words out. The spacing on the paper is often off. They'll really have a hard time copying from a board or from something else, from a paper to their own paper. They may have everything on one side of the paper, so that's poor planning on how to have their paper spaced out. They may hold their pencil very tightly and grip it in a way that looks to us like it could be hard to write with.
Hmm. You know, and I don't want to get too far off of this, but do we know what causes dysgraphia? You know, dyslexia for some reason seems more intuitively like you could see where that would be problematic. But dysgraphia, is that also a neurological issue? Did you say that at the beginning that I missed that?
That's okay. But yes, it is also neurological.
Okay. Yep. Okay. And then how about the symptoms or the red flags for the learning disability dyscalculia?
Sure. It's similar to when kids are learning to read and write. It's with math. It's the same area where kids are just maybe not learning their facts as quickly as their same peers. Counting, when they're first learning to count, it's just not clicking. And then even being able to match the number one that you say out loud to one item, to two items, you're saying two, to be able to learn like the adding process, but then the next day, how do I do this again? Having a visual is often very, very important for these kids to have manipulatives when they're learning math facts, telling time, measuring just numbers in general. It's difficult for kids with dyscalculia. And the important thing is that it's not without having been taught them, but it's after you're teaching them and you feel like they should be learning this and they're just not holding on to it.
What are some of the things that parents should look for if they suspect auditory processing?
They can look for, let's say they're hearing language come at them, but they can't maybe interpret it back what they're hearing. They do better job with sounds and music, things put to sound and music. They may have a difficult time processing things. They may be slower, so it might take them a little longer to explain what they just heard. They might confuse celery, salary, different sounding words because what they're hearing is coming out. They think they sound the same. They could be distracted by a lot of background noises, so they need to have it be quiet when they work. Again, like I said in the earlier segment, they would say, what? as if they haven't heard what you just said.
Another sign that I've heard from many parents would be, okay, I asked my child to go upstairs, brush their teeth, go to the bathroom, put on their pajamas, and get into bed. And I come find them, and they've maybe done one of those things. And that processing of all of those directions at once is just, it's overwhelming. And maybe they ended up in bed without doing the other things. But you see that at school where they've been given multiple step directions for an assignment, and they don't even know where to begin because they heard the last part, but they don't know how to get there. So,
now, are these things that you can work on as parents with your children? Like I know, for example, we have like a kitchen stove at home, like a kids set with the different foods. And like maybe give orders to your children to say, hey, you know, can you get me a hamburger, a tomato, and a piece of fruit, and then maybe three or four items, and then have them repeat them back to you? Is that a way to work that out?
You could, but I would start with the visual, making checklists for kids so that you can, as many senses as you can work with any of these disabilities, the better. So giving them the visual and then breaking it down into maybe one step at a time, where they do the first step and then they check in with you. While it feels tedious, it's just so important for them to just also just take it slowly and have time for repetition within those systems. And as organized as you can be as a teacher or a parent for these kids, the better as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to the next learning difficulty, what factors should cause concern for possible disorder in the area of language processing?
For language processing, they will often hear something, but they can't write it. So they would and also have some poor reading comprehension. They might not be able to speak what they hear. They have difficulty expressing their thoughts into words. They would not necessarily be able to label things very well. They would say, these words are right here on the tip of my tongue, but I don't know how to say them correctly. They could maybe draw it, but not think about that what that word actually is.
I also see students who will just appear very frustrated when they're trying to process what's being said to them. Speech and language pathologists are really, really well-skilled in this area, and that's who I would refer parents to.
Okay. You know, now that we've discussed the different common types of learning disabilities and what parents should look for in helping to determine whether their children are dealing with them or not, what should parents do if they suspect a learning disability? What actions can they take?
Well, I can speak to that one because as a parent, my son was a sophomore in high school when I thought there's a disconnect between what he's doing in the classroom and what he's doing on his regular like SAT test. He did so well, but in the classroom, he was really struggling. And so I actually had my son tested by a psychologist, a neuropsychologist, who took him through a battery of tests. And it was eye-opening experience for me, for him as well, to understand this is what's actually going on. You're not lazy. You're trying your best, but there is something going on in your brain that's keeping you from learning. And so I think if parents can get their child tested, it's an excellent thing.
Okay. Yeah, and there's actually a couple places that we usually recommend. If you want to talk about the names of those places just quickly for our parents that might be listening.
Sure. We can say right at the U of M, there are great neurologists. And then Partners in Healing is one I am partial to. The woman, one of the women there that is a neuropsych, her name is Nancy Foster. And kudos to her. She just does a really beautiful job of working with an entire family when a child comes in for an assessment, where she just takes a big picture of the child and then just shows the parents, this is where your child has strengths and this is where your child has weaknesses and this is what we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another one that we often recommend is the Fraser Center.
Definitely.
Over at the University of Minnesota area off of University Avenue. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
And Groves is a school in St. Louis Park that also does a really fabulous job.
All right, so as instructors at Liberty Classical Academy, how do both of you help students overcome these obstacles? So once they've been diagnosed, and we know that we have a diagnosis, how do you do reading instruction with a child who has dyslexia?
As a fifth grade teacher, of course, I'm not necessarily teaching a child to read, but I do have students that come into my classroom that are struggling with reading, and that's where my Orton-Gillingham training has come in handy, because I'm actually able to use a multisensory process to help these students become better readers. One of the things we definitely suggest for fluency for reading is that they read 20 minutes a day out loud. That increases their reading fluency. But again, that Orton-Gillingham training where they actually can break apart words and learn how to spell words. I do that same instruction for spelling with my fifth grade as well to help them become better spellers, and that also helps them become better readers.
Mm-hmm. And as kids are still struggling within the classroom, if they aren't able to meet the standards that are set for them there, we just recommend that they would be getting one-on-one instruction with a tutor. So both of us, Suzanne and I, are able to do that at our school. Some also receive even more help outside of school. The best way to teach a kid to read is to have it be at their level and to move at the pace in which they need to go. If you push it too fast, then you lose them again. So to be able to provide that one-on-one is just so beneficial.
Good. And then what about just assistance with classwork? I know that that doesn't apply to just dyslexia, but that applies to some of the other learning disabilities as well.
I always try to show, when we're talking about processing, whether we're talking about working memory, I try to do an activity with the students before I actually make them do the assignment. So they see it, everything that I'm expecting of them before they actually do it. That's helpful for all the students, not just the students who are struggling with learning disabilities.
Mm-hmm. And just to be able, as a teacher, to teach to all different learning styles. So having activities that involve large movement, having activities that involve visual, having activities that involve the auditory, just always engaging with all of those learning styles also really benefits the entire classroom, and it's good for all kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then one more before we head into maybe some websites that you can share with us. If you are working with a child that has a learning disability, presumably you're going to be working alongside the teachers, that they're classroom teachers too. Can you tell us a little bit what that looks like?
Sure. I try to touch base with teachers to find out when tests are coming up, when large assignments are coming up, to be able to help maybe some of the students that struggle with the executive functioning to stay on top of getting prepared and managing their time. Sometimes it's just managing their backpack or their locker, but try to be that middleman between the teacher and the student and even the parents, to just try to make it a beautiful operation rather than leave it all on the child who's really struggling sometimes. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, we're thrilled that we have both of you at Liberty Classical Academy, because you've really been able to provide a much better experience for the students that have learning disabilities at Liberty. We just have a few seconds. If you can just quickly tell us the names of some websites, and then I'm going to close out the show in just a few seconds.
Sure. Orton-Gillingham of Minnesota is a great place to look when your child is struggling with dyslexia. LDA of America, it's LDA.com, I believe. They also are just full of information about learning disabilities. And then also locally, there is a branch too. And also just to Google the word dyslexia, and you will be linked to a million things. So, yeah.
Boy, so much information. This is jam-packed today. I want to thank both Shirley and Suzanne for joining us on the show today, and Mark for being my co-host. And we thank our listeners for joining us this morning. And you can listen to this episode of Education Nation or any past show on iTunes and also on our Education Nation podcast. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you. Dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone.